HDB Podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK. Hello and welcome to this Cereals and Oilseeds episode of the HDB Podcast. I'm Eleanor Holdsler and I'm up in Shetland with Sarah Hunter-Argyle to find out about the barley innovations that have been going on. We'll be speaking to Kirsty and Amy Budge, who host the Monitor Farm project here, Jamie Leslie, who chairs the Monitor Farm group, as well as Graham Fraser from SAC Consulting, who facilitates the group. But now I'll hand you over to Sarah, who's somewhere a little bit less windy.
Hello, yes, we're really excited to be in Shetland. And first of all, we went to chat to Kirsty and Amy Budge, our Shetland Monitor Farmers, who took over their family farm on South Shetland 5 years ago. They run two units, Bigton and Toab, and while their main enterprises are beef and sheep, they are now increasing their focus on barley, not only to ensure that they are self-sufficient in terms of feed, but also to increase their income through selling surplus to local farmers. Now in their final year of the Monitor Farm Scotland project, which is jointly managed by HDB and Quality Meat Scotland, we caught up with them to find out how they have improved their barley yields.
Here at Bigton Farm, then, we have always grown barley, as far as I can remember. Our record book goes back to 1982, and we've grown barley then. So before that as well, our granddad said he can always remember growing it, and they also grew some oats. Here, just now, then, we have about 60 acres of barley between Bigton and our other farm at Tobe. This is just about standard. We slightly increased last year with the fields that were being ploughed, but this year reduced it back slightly so that we can increase our inputs.
Can you tell me a little bit about growing barley on Shetland? I mean, I know there's not many farms on the island who can grow barley.
Mostly on Shetland it would be oats, just because of the pH soil type. Barley just wouldn't be suitable to be grown. So we're very lucky living in the south of the island where the soil is slightly more sandy and we can grow it easier.
And it's usually used for feed?
Yeah, we grow barley for feed, as the same with other farmers that grow barley for combining. And we sell about 60% of it and we keep the rest for feeding.
Presumably then it's very expensive to import feed from the mainland.
There's massive freight costs on barley in Shetland. I think it was well over £200 to the tonne this last year.
You're adding about £60 a tonne to the cost of barley up here by the time it's freighted in.
Yeah. So, which means that we're selling it and making a good profit on it, but we're still not selling it at market price because we don't want to upset our neighbouring farmers, really. Yeah.
It's a balance between
it is a balance,
money
yeah.
and being part of a community.
That's right, yeah. And we might also want to buy things from our other farmers.
Yeah, yeah, two-way street. And Graham, when you started facilitating the Shetland Monitor Farm, what discussions did you have around barley initially for girls?
Well, it was very useful to have as Kirsty said, there's not that many units in Shetland do grow barley and crops like that. So the fact that they were willing to become the monitor farm was very useful from our point of view, because it meant we could look at those crops along with the other enterprises on the farm. And we certainly, I think we've probably, the discussions we've had about barley are probably centered around trying to push it a little bit harder, trying to get a little bit more of it. I think because of the extreme climate up here and how the weather can break in the back end, there's probably historically been a very, very conservative approach to the barley crop, where the amount of nitrogen and fertilizer applied to the crop has been very conservative, because folk are worried about its standing power, and if they push it too hard and get too heavy a crop, then the whole thing goes flat and it just becomes a complete nightmare when the weather breaks in the back end. So, but I think we're sort of coming around to the idea that there's probably scope to push it a bit harder than we have been in the past without going over the top. And certainly with the use of growth regulators and things like that, we can make sure it can still stand.
And when you talk about weather breaking in the back end for people who aren't used to these kind of conditions, what is it like?
Well, frequently we talk, you know, folk talk about the equinoctial gales. So about the middle of September, you can be getting full on gales quite easily. And in an average year, you're probably still only cutting half the crop by about that stage. And last year was a very good year and everything was cut probably by about the first week in September, I think. But that's far from typical, and there can still be a lot of crop on the ground in the middle of September. And if it gets a full-blown gale, then there can be a lot of shedding and loss of grain.
So what kind of yields did you get, say, before the monitor farm and you started trying new things?
Well, we've never really calculated our yield very accurately because we didn't have means to do so. But last year we estimated that we got about 1.9 tonnes per acre for our wagon, which is what we normally grow. But we did some new variety trials and we got about 2.4 tonnes per acre through increased inputs. So that kind of has given us a boost to try these increased inputs to looking at increasing our yield.
So what kind of inputs were you changing up?
The main inputs would be increasing our fertiliser and nitrogen to about double. We haven't used much fungicides up here because there's not much disease pressure, and we do sometimes see Rhyngosporium or mildew depending on the weather, so we'd apply then.
And so last year, what varieties were you growing? And this was part of a larger trial, wasn't it, that we did different monitor farms in the UK, mm-hmm. and using some traditional Scandinavian varieties?
Yep. So we grew Annalee and Bragg, which is two Scandinavian varieties, Fairing, which is a new variety, and we also grew Golden Promise, which is an old variety that we used to grow here in about the 80s, I think. And that actually did very well. It was early ripening, but it didn't yield as high as the others. There was quite a bit of mildew on the Golden Promise, which was the problem with, or which it became a bit of a problem with Golden Promise. The Bragg was really good very early, but it definitely didn't kill it as much. There wasn't as many plants in that, but then at the same time, it was a four-row variety. So six-row variety. So that kind of helped it a bit.
So what would you say you learned from that year of trials that you've taken forward?
It's opened us up to trying different varieties, which we've done this year. It's also really made us look at it. Well, it's shown us that increasing our inputs is cost effective, and it shows, and we can yield a lot higher than we were before.
And so this year, what are you doing? What are you trying?
We've doubled our nitrogen input on our barley, and we're trying a few different varieties. We're trying Fairing and Planet, and we're trying a Scandinavian variety, Salome. And we've got our wagon, which is a good one to use as our control. We've also increased our manganese input, so feeding the crop the nutrients, because we're giving it more pressure with more nitrogen on it.
How's it looking then? How are the different varieties looking at the moment?
The different varieties are looking quite good. Our barley is looking quite good. The weather's been quite kind to it. The Salome, the Scandinavian variety, that's looking really good. It's been quite vigorous and tillering. And our wagon is looking really good as well. It's got good establishment, but compared to the Fairing and Planet, then they're looking a bit less...
poorer. Yeah.
They're looking a bit poorer. There's definitely less plants around. So we'll just see how that comes.
How will you measure the yields later? Will you be sort of comparing and contrasting when it comes to harvest time?
Yeah, we actually, through the Monitor Farm project, then we have bought whey pads. So we'll have an accurate measure of every variety that we have, and that'll really help to compare the different varieties. And we'll just do a basic straw bale count as well.
Because straw is important for us, especially on the island. Then we use all our own straw, so we're self-sufficient, which is really handy. But we also sold a lot of straw to our neighbours, so that was a good cash inflow.
We sold over 100 bales of straw last year, which is so much more, I think, than we've ever sold. We never really used to sell much straw, but last year, after growing a bit more barley, then we were able to sell over 100 bales of straw. So in Shetland, then, the straw costs about £60 a bale. So that's just with the added freight cost on top of it. We were selling it for £40 a round bale. So that gives the customer a kind of a cheaper bale, but for us, then that helped us cover our costs and make a bit of extra money. We also bought a new combine last year, so we needed to, not a brand new combine, obviously, but we needed to be able to recoup that cost as well.
Yeah. What about in terms of just general farming in Shetland? What are the weather conditions, the growing season, the rainfall, what's all that? What are you dealing with?
The rainfall is not too extreme. We're about maybe 45 inches annual rainfall, something like that, which when you compare to some of the West Coast is not too bad. It's probably the wind and the exposure is the big problem. You know, this time of year, the wind does have a habit of going around to the north, as you probably felt out there today, and the wind chill can be quite quite severe, so that can stop growth in its tracks. And if it's, it has, some years had a bit of a habit of sticking there for several weeks in a row. But so far this spring's been one of the better ones. I'd say there's a good bit of grass around. We always get gales and severe gales over the winter. The winters in recent years probably tended to be milder, but probably windier as well. With that, it can be quite severe. A lot of salt spray, of course.
What can that do?
Well, it can be quite severe on the grass and any crops. I mean, if it last there was quite an event, wasn't there, last year with Jamie got a lot of salt spray damage to his barley. It was through. It was just at the sort of tillering stage, and it just got blasted. And, mm-hmm. and there was bits of the field that you were very surprised that they actually recovered. I think most of it did recover, but it did set it back a wee bit.
Yeah. And in terms of sort of sunshine, I mean, obviously you get kind of quite long days here. But how does that affect things?
Well, what it probably means is we get a very concentrated period of growth. You know, when growth kicks in with a long day length, then it just goes like a train. And that makes grassland tricky to manage, because if you're carrying the amount of stock to that you can cope with in the early spring, in the colder part of the spring, then it's hard to have enough mouths around in June and July to really keep control of that grass, because it just grows like mad and can get away from your stock very easily. So all the barley is prop corn for storage here, just all because right. of, last year the barley was coming in very dry.
The
17 to 19%, I think, is what we had generally. Which
we didn't even have that. Our dad wrote out a chart for the prop corn instructions, and it only went into, 22%, mm-hmm. I think. So he never thought it would ever be drier. And it was down to 17, which was incredible.
But in most seasons here, you know, because of the risk of weather breaking, they'll be combining as soon as it's down under 30%. Probably.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
at least if it's anywhere near 25, it'd be certainly taking it. And so it always gets prop corn to you, because it's all just going for feed.
In terms of how much you're able to supply, there's still obviously quite a lot of farmers having to buy in a lot of feed.
Yeah, there is, We would be one of the only farms in Shetland that would be just almost completely self-sufficient in feed. Because we finish our lambs, then we have bought in finishing pellets for them for our hopper, and we buy in some yow nuts as well. But apart from that, then we use our own barley, our own straw, our own silage. So there's not that many other handful of farmers that would be like that. Everybody else in Shetland has to buy in very expensive feed.
What are you hoping for this year? What are you hoping to see? Higher yields? And
yeah, absolutely, trying to maximise our yields both in the barley grain and the straw, so that we can try and increase our sales for our cash flow. Again, just the way that our farm is with the sheep and the cattle, then we don't have any money coming in through the summer. So if we can get that money at the end of the summer, get some barley and straw sold, then that will really help the cash flow.
And do you do much in the way of sort of soil testing, or tissue sampling or anything? What do you find?
We are keen on soil sampling. We've probably done every field in the last 3 years, and we just need to make sure we keep that up. Here at Big Ten, we would get lower pHs, so we'd have to apply sand or lime. But down at Tobe, our pH seems to be is really quite high with the sandy soils, so that suits us fine. At Tobe, we're quite low in potash basically everywhere, so we just need to maintain levels there. We've not tried tissue sampling yet, but that's something we definitely want to do, try our grass and our barley.
Is there anything that you'd want to share with farmers more down south?
How it's up here compared to some of the
people listening. I suppose we're always trying to get the message across that in Shetland, then it's not just sheep on hills, and that we are able to, we are growing a lot of forage crops. We're growing arable crops. I mean, we're not getting the 5-ton crops, but I mean, we're really trying to push our crops, and that they are performing really well. I mean, we have a really short, high intensity kind of growing season, so that does help. So we are really achieving, but at the same time, then it is very tough with the unpredictable weather and the seasons just constantly changing. That's very difficult. And then the freight costs as well.
Yeah.
I mean, although it doesn't feel like we've made big changes, then it's like the Team Sky approach. We've made small changes and they're definitely paying off.
I think a lot of the farmers south as well don't really appreciate necessarily how far north we are.
Mm-hmm.
Used to seeing Shetland in a box in the Murray Firth, I think, and I think they don't quite realise how far north we are. I mean, Lerwick, which is roughly in the middle of Shetland, is almost equal distant from Tórshavn in Faroe, Bergen in Norway, and Aberdeen. You know, we're 200 odd miles from each of them. We're a lot further north than folk sometimes realise.
Yeah. There's obviously, I assume, not many agronomists and things around to help you and advise mm-hmm. you. So how do you sort of look at how to manage the crop?
We rely on Graham. Yeah, it's basically just trying to think through the monitor farm. Then we've met a lot of people. We were able to just use virtual agronomy, sending photos to group chats.
Well, we've started that this
started
year.
Started doing that this year.
Jamie's a good help. He advises us a lot on our barley.
And because Jamie just lives next to our other farm at yeah. Tobe, then he can see it and will always tell us when there's something needing done. It's been really helpful, really good to make contacts to just hear other people's ideas and try things out.
Yeah, because before it would have just been us doing it.
Yeah, trying to mix something up.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's part of one of the benefits of the Monitor Farm programme, yeah. Building networks, isn't it?
It is, definitely. And even just getting speakers up and they might recommend somebody, and I think pulling the whole community group together. And Jamie's just been a great help, and that he's made a lot of contacts as well from doing the Monitor Farm and being involved in the year, and then that's really helped give us more contacts as well.
Now we're going to speak to Jamie Leslie, who's one of Kirsty's and Amy's neighbours, and he's been closely involved in the Monitor Farm project as chair of the management group. He's also predominantly a livestock farmer, but he's seen some huge yield improvements to his barley crop after taking part in the Yield Enhancement Network Awards last year. We joined Jamie for a chat about how he achieved a 40% increase in his barley yield.
So we are very much predominantly a beef and sheep farm. We farm at the south end of Shetland. It's quite spread out with smaller units spread throughout the parish, I suppose. I work together as one larger farm business. We top 1,000 ewes and bull 80 cows, suckler cows, and then we also grow a few different crops to feed them, either silage, fodder beet, some kale, and obviously barley, spring barley.
And what kind of size of the farm? How many hectares or acres are we?
There's a mixture of owned, a little bit of seasonal, and one contract farm, and in total it's 350 hectares.
And in terms of the barley grown, how much land do you use for that?
Not huge acreage of barley. We'll have about 20 hectares.
Okay, but you've always grown barley for feeding stock, or is it a newer enterprise?
No, we've always grown feed barley for as long as I can remember, and probably before that too. Due to freight costs to import straw especially and feed, we tend to grow enough to feed our own animals to cut out the freight costs.
So it's mainly about being self-sufficient, yes. Rather than selling on any...
Yeah, we occasionally sell a surplus, but predominantly to satisfy our own animals' needs.
In terms of growing barley on Shetland, how would you say that differs from growing it elsewhere?
Well, we're limited. We can only grow spring barley due to the style of our winters. But apart from that, we've got long summer days, so we've got plenty of daylight, never extreme temperatures, which suits spring barley quite well. So in theory, it should work quite well, I think.
Yeah, and the disease pressure's not very high here either.
No, it's something we didn't pay much attention to until I started in Yen, but because of the low area of barley grown in this area, it's not a huge problem so far.
And you mentioned Yen, so that's the Yield Enhancement Network.
Yes.
And you got involved in that for the first time last year.
Yep, AHDB sponsored me last year. It was certainly a bit strange for a small arable area farmer that's definitely more into cows and sheep to be involved with that, but very, very rewarding and really, really enjoyable.
Yeah. So what can you just give me a summary of what the main process is, and how did you do things differently having with your barley taking part in Yen?
Well, Yen is the Yield Enhancement Network. So basically you enter a 2 hectare or more area of a field and you sow it and you grow it and you harvest it and you measure the yield, and ADAS works out your yield potential and then they calculate what percentage of your yield potential you manage to achieve. So it's really about knowledge transfer, benchmarking, and just paying a bit more attention to what you're doing. For me, the yield word and the competition words are a part of it, but it really for me is about talking to other farmers and sharing ideas and hopefully gaining some more knowledge. We started that journey slightly. We went from a very traditional approach of barley just being a crop that was grown and not done much with, to paying a little bit more attention and applying a bit more nitrogen and things. But with the yen and talking to people on WhatsApp groups and bits and pieces like that, we applied a fair bit more nitrogen, a lot more targeted with PGR, but also started on to foliar treatments for things that we struggle with as well.
And you mentioned the WhatsApp kind of chat as well. Yes. Has that helped to build a bigger network of barley growers?
It definitely is, because we are very isolated up here in terms of arable farmers. So there's two or three neighbours that grow barley, but it's difficult to go and get new ideas, and we can't go to every meeting we'd like to go to because of the distances involved. So WhatsApp is a great way to throw questions out there, but also just have a bit of fun chat as well.
And you obviously did very well in the yen. You got a gold award.
We got a gold award for yield potential achieved. So we got 7.9 ton of yield, which surpassed our expectations, certainly.
And it's quite an increase on previous
years. Yeah, we would have thought our rolling 5-year average would have been kind of 5.5 ton, would have been more like it.
And so do you think that you can then replicate that this year?
I think we could break 8 ton barrier, yes. We need weather to be on our side, obviously. But I think the use of foliar treatments was big for us last year. We're very sandy soils, way up to 86% sand content in our soils. So we have huge problems with potassium and always low index potassium. But applying foliar K to barley worked really well last year, and we hope to do more of that this year.
And last year, can you tell us a bit about the varieties you grew and what you're growing this year?
Last year we grew Planet and Laureate. It was Planet that was entered into yen. We got on really well with Planet, and we only just got away with Laureate due to its slightly longer maturity. Last year was a perfect harvest weather pattern, and we only just got it harvested, so we won't grow that here again. This year we have Planet, a little bit of Sassy, and a new variety, I think, for the UK called Salome or Salome, which is a Scandinavian variety.
And can you tell us a bit about why you started growing the Salome?
Last year, through the Scottish Yen Group, we got a study trip to Sweden, to the
Borgby.
You would say that later.
It's like the Swedish version of cereals.
Yes, we got a trip to a cereals event in Sweden. And there they had lots and lots and lots of trial plots on the showground. And Salome really stood out for us. And when we spoke to the Scandinavian seeds guys, they all said for early maturity and a decent yield, that was the variety to try. So through AHDB and the Monitor Farm Innovation projects, we got some seed imported to here and the Lothian's Mother Farm.
Yeah.
So we've got two farms with it up in Shetland and a couple down in the Lothian's too. So very excited to see how that performs this harvest.
Yeah, I think there's some in Angus as well.
Okay.
So they're growing it too. So hopefully get a good comparison across the sites.
Yes.
So in terms of how things are going so far with it, what do you think?
It's looking really well. It was sown a week later than the Planet due to getting the time frames to get the seed here, but it certainly looks well. It's tillering very actively, so we've high hopes.
And in terms of the maturity, how early are you hoping it'll, like, compared to Laureate?
It's difficult because it's not on the UK lists, but comparing results on the Scandinavian lists to the UK lists, I would hope it would be minus 1 day compared to Planet. Or Concerto, and whereas Laureate is plus 1 day. But the further north you go, those days might mean 4 or 5 days. So I would have said Laureate was 5 to 7 days later than Planet up here. So I'm hoping Salome will be 5 to 7 days earlier than Planet.
Because when is it the sort of cutoff? What is the normal sort of harvesting period up here?
We finished spring barley harvest in August twice. Last year was the second time. Usually it would be mid-September when we finished, but we have combined in October quite often. But as darkness gets more and more, it's very difficult to get a decent length of day at harvest. And straw is almost as valuable as barley up here, so it's really important to get that as well.
Yen this year, tell us about.
Yeah, the yen this year, it's a Salome that we entered into the yen, just worked for the field and bits and pieces. So we're in yen this year again. Inputs will be similar to last year, but last year the foliar K was applied as a kind of firefighting mission once we saw a problem, whereas this year it's going on as a standard treatment. So we hope that'll keep crop momentum up and hopefully add a little bit of yield to it.
Do you think you'll do anything differently this year with the yen than you did last year? Or
there's not a lot you can do differently with spring barley, but certainly foliar K is going to be applied much more routinely for a starting point.
And I know that obviously the reports that you get back, there's been discussion about having a specific spring barley report, which will be much more relevant for the barley growers. And can you explain why that is?
Well, the report is it's a book, really. It's not a document. It's huge. And you get various results for a whole range of different factors, from nutrient contents of the plant, to the grain, to weather, to everything. And the reports are based around wheat. So some of the levels that you'll be looking for in barley will be different from wheat. So I think this year we will get barley-specific reports, so it'll mean a lot more.
Yeah, you'll be able to do more with those.
Yeah, the levels will be set for barley's recommended levels rather than wheat, so it will mean a lot more.
And would you recommend to other farmers to get involved in the yen?
Yes, I certainly would. It was a little bit apprehensive about the competition element of it, but it really hasn't been that at all. It really has been about getting like minds together and talking about things and challenging one another. So for that process, it has been absolutely worthwhile.
And also for, as you say, you're predominantly a livestock farmer, but it's still been useful for you in terms of barley. And also they're doing grass now?
Yes, we have a grass yen this year as well. But the grass yen, I think, is just a couple of years old that side of the competition. But for us, grass is our main crop, so we thought we'd give it a bash. But instead of doing a whole plot and just going for, well, in the grass yen, they do energy and yield to kind of include a quality component to the grass, but instead of doing that, we're doing tramline trials as part of our grass yen rather than a whole field yield.
So in terms of cost of production, how's that changed since you've been doing the yen?
Well, before we had a very low input type, traditional type barley growing system, and for the yen entry last year, we worked out our old traditional type input system would have cost us about £400 per hectare, and we increased that by nearly £190 per hectare, so we're up at nearly £600 per hectare of inputs. Obviously our fertiliser and things are quite a bit more expensive than the mainland, so those figures might be quite high. But the main thing is, it doesn't really matter what you spend on it as long as the cost of production is fine. And with the new increased inputs and more focused inputs, the profit per hectare was increased by £480 compared with the old type system. So we definitely saw a big cost benefit in paying a bit more attention to what we were doing and applying our inputs in a more timely and precise fashion.
Would you have done this kind of calculations before you did the yen, so looking at your cost benefit?
Before yen, we, because of the machinery costs on our small area of barley, before I entered yen, we decided to either stop growing barley or grow barley better. So we had been looking at our cost of production for barley, so yen came along at the right time to encourage us to do it better rather than stop doing it.
What's the history of growing barley in Shetland? Is there more now than there used to be, or is there the same amount? Or
I wouldn't know that exactly, but I would suspect there used to be more. The traditional croft type, when I was a little boy, the traditional croft, there would have been a lot of people just with an acre or two of barley. Mm. That doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah.
Traditional croft type holding that you see in the Western Isles still, I think, isn't really in Shetland anymore. Mm. There probably would be more farms growing 20 plus hectares, but less farms in total growing barley, yes.
Yeah. And would that mean that you could have grown it in other parts of the island?
Yeah, there certainly is patches here and there, like Tingle's very fertile ground, and even up in Unst, the North Isle's got some really good land, and there is smaller patches here, there, and everywhere, yes. But it's the machinery involved with getting a ton of barley into a shed is quite staggering.
Yeah, because we were looking at some of the import figures, or Eleanor was, and there's still quite a lot imported in here, according
feed
to
our,
yeah.
Oh, it's frightening.
Yeah.
And it's 50 quid a ton, or upwards of 50 quid a ton every ton of feed that comes in, just for the boat.
And that's just come from Scotland, just farmers
from Aberdeen,
down.
Yeah.
And so if you give your own explanation, Jamie, of what it's like to farm in Shetland.
And if you're going to choose somewhere in the world to live to farm, it wouldn't be Shetland. But there's lots of other reasons to stay here, like family and community, and lots of other reasons to stay in Shetland. End of the island we stay on, I really like for farming. It's really sandy soils. We can push things with livestock outside through the winter. There are constraints, particularly with freight input costs. Our weather constraints are quite different from lots of places in Scotland, in that it's wind, rain, and sea salt in the wintertime rather than snow that higher places in Scotland would get. But there's also opportunities too, so you just have to make the best of what you've got.
Because you've got that long light period, it's not that cold.
23 days sunlight in the peak of summertime, so we don't usually get much frost, although we had a bit this spring, late spring, which is very unusual, but we don't usually have much really low or really high temperatures, so for actually growing crops and grass, it actually works away okay.
And of course you don't have the same disease pressure, so you've never had to...
The yen frightened me into using fungicides, so we have used it a wee bit as an insurance policy in the yen. But I don't know, it'll be an interesting thing to try and do some tramline trials on in Shetland, but with the nature of disease pressures, it's difficult to predict what might not happen.
In terms of, didn't you really use fungicides much before? Because I've not discussed it before. But so why is it that it frightened you? Is it because of the varieties that you're trying, or is it...
We're pushing the crop a lot harder. We're expecting yields to be 50% higher than we would have been happy with before. So there's a bit more invested in it. There's a bit more at risk, but also the crop is more stressed, or it's trying harder throughout the growing season. With disease, you don't really know. It's knackered till it's too late. Yeah. So we just did one fungicide last year, so I think we'll just do the same. A flag leaf fungicide will be the only treatment, I would think.
So that's it for this episode. Thanks very much for listening. If you want to find out more about the Scottish Monitorphone Programme, please do follow the links in the podcast show notes, and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out any new future episodes. Tune in for the next episode, which will be brought to us by Gemma Pament and the Beef and Lamb team.
Visit ahdb.org.uk for all the latest news, research and information, and follow us on Twitter @theahdb to stay up to date.